stuff. All right, let's call tonight's meeting to order, please. Can we get a roll call, Stephanie?
Smith.
Here.
Birkin.
I'm here.
Seal.
Here.
Sherwood, absent. Cable.
Here.
Benz.
Here.
McBride, absent.
Are there any changes or additions to tonight's agenda? Hearing none, the agenda will stand approved. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes from the 5th of September? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. We have a time for public comment now on issues that are not already scheduled to be heard tonight. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to speak? Very good. Then we'll move on to our first public hearing. Ordinance number 276, Amendment to Chapter 88, regarding access standards. Amelia.
Okay, so I'm just going to quickly go through what the proposed ordinance is, and then I want to talk a little bit more about the intent and just what we looked at in making amendments to this ordinance. I know you've seen it a couple times just for discussion purposes, but tonight we're hoping for discussion and consideration. So first, under access requirements, you'll see the first provision is regarding driveways off existing roads. This provision, again, this entire ordinance was added in 2013, and this provision specifically was so that folks know when they come in what standards apply to new driveways off county roads. So we have a 300-foot separation distance between other driveways to site a new driveway off a county road, and we also have a 500-foot site distance requirement, so looking in either direction, can you see 500 feet? Since last meeting, we actually had conceptual review with Darren Moon, the county engineer, and we've added in the 500-foot site distance requirement. That's always been a requirement. It's just so that folks like the 300-foot separation distance are aware of that. Next is a provision for existing lots, parcels, and tracts. Specifically,
existing lots that don't have frontage. There are requirements for the width of an easement. In the case that you don't have frontage, that if it's, let's see, for one dwelling 20 feet wide, multiple dwellings 50 feet wide, and then for existing lots that have frontage but don't meet your site or your separation distance requirements for new driveways, you may use an access easement but share. However, and this is what this diagram is showing, in those cases, the access easement is limited to the first 50 feet of the lot. And at that, after that first 50 feet, you then branch off the common lot line. This 50-foot limit is also in place for new parcels, lots, and tracts. That is the third provision in this ordinance. New lots must have frontage as well. However, the lots created through the residential parcel subdivision process were already accepted from requiring frontage. So we just reiterate that in the ordinance as well. So now a little bit more on the intent of the 50-foot limit for in the case where a parcel has frontage but you can't do a new drive because there is a 300-foot distance between other drives and 500 feet of sight line. You know, this is one of the main questions we looked at when we reviewed this ordinance. You know, why do we have this 50-foot limit? I think I'll start with this. This is the POP subdivision. It's since been kind of reconfigured. It's north of Nevada. You can see that there are three lots here. There's an access easement. I tried to highlight it. I don't have a digital copy, so I apologize for how poor it looks on here. And then you've got another access easement down here. You can see that these are much longer than 50 feet. These were done before we had this requirement in place. So then, after the POP subdivision had been platted, we still didn't have the limit of 50 feet. And so what happened was the easement was extended, and six more lots were platted behind other lots. We understand that with the limit of 50 feet, if you can just branch off after the 50 feet, you could still have a really long driveway. But that's your individual driveway. It's not shared with other people. But I think what it gets down to is that by using access easements, you can avoid meeting street specification standards. And we've seen this. This is an image of some of the roads that don't meet street specification standards because they aren't. So again, street specification standards are grade, they're weight limits, they're requiring ditching or other drainage. They're important. So what you have instead is roads that don't have ditching, that a road out that don't meet grade. This is the turnaround for a fire engine that was required, but again, this really wasn't graded so that anyone could really turn around on it. These are the issues that we were encountering when we first required that 50-foot limit. So again, while we currently have a statement that says, your lot must have frontage on a public road or a private road, that prohibits creating lots behind other lots. We still have this 50-foot requirement that really limits driveways where there's one or there's more than one dwelling that use them that are really long and don't meet our street specification standards. So that's why, in this review of the ordinance, we kept that 50-foot limit in place.
And again, in this scenario that she's showing you, this is a long driveway. So it was initially set up for three lots on the north end, and then it was extended to the six lots that you see there. It's not part of the road.
My scenario that I asked you about out by our house, is that what this is for? Or
the line is the line intersection?
Yes. Because there's three lots without a driveway and they say they can't get a driveway.
I'm not sure if that's the exact scenario. So I think they have frontage on a road, right?
Well, the four houses do, but these are the three lots at the end. So, that's a long driveway. But
right.
Works good.
Yeah. So sometimes they could, but sometimes, without requiring a lot of frontage, we get into one that don't require access or other.
So, there is this scenario that Kathy's talking about, and I think that's what we talked about last month, was you have somebody that maybe owns these lots now with the idea of developing them, mm-hmm. and there are these other exceptions that are out there. Mm-hmm. What happens to somebody that doesn't have frontage?
Mm-hmm. So again, that second provision in the existing lots, you didn't change anything there. Still, if you don't have frontage, you can have an access easement that would wind back to that lot. If you've got one dwelling, it should be 20 feet in width. If there are multiple dwellings, it should be 50 feet in width. But in no case shall that access provide more than four single family dwellings, more than two family dwellings, or more than two multiple dwellings.
Okay. So there is still an exception, basically.
For lots that are available,
Okay.
You can see that.
So it would simply be doing a subdivision or whatever to get a new buildable lot. That's when this would come into play.
Right. And so, I guess the first part, exactly, the first part of that is doing a new subdivision lot. You have to have frontage. You can have a private road, public road. But if in the case you'd like to use a shared access easement off that road, it is limited in length. And again, that's, you know, through conversations with the county engineer, because there was concern about really long driveways that don't meet specifications, street specification standards. And again, I understand that there's a workaround if you have your individual, just one really long driveway that's yours. I think the difference is when it's multiple elements. So that's how we answer it. Now we can take that out, 50-foot limit.
What about a new parcel created through a single split? It doesn't put into effect the platting process. Can they have a long winding easement?
The class survey process?
Yeah.
Not any of the existing lots.
You're saying right, a larger piece is divided once.
Right, right. So it's a...
Yeah.
It doesn't actually fall, neither two or three is applicable in that case, because it is not an existing one and it's not a new one created through the platting process. Is that correct?
It would involve the supervisor.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And we did reiterate the exception for residential parcel subdivisions.
Okay.
In that provision that allows for easements.
All right.
Any other questions? Are there any comments from the public on this proposed ordinance? Scott, you know the routine.
Scott Renault, Fox Engineering. I'm the one that asked the supervisors to bring this forward to get it clarified. It's been a source of conflict with Amelia's going to put that up on the board as well. It's been a source of conflict with past directors. I thought this ordinance was written rather clunkily and didn't like how it was written. And so there's some improvement to this, though I still think clarification would be valuable. And really, I don't think there's any reason to limit the length of the easement at all. Because just as I'm showing on this, on my little sketch there, this is Cameron Estates, so this is an actual example, and this is the first edition where we had the issue with previous director, Mr. Dissel, and this is how we reconciled it at that point in time. And so what we have here is some examples of, depending on where you wanted to site your house, you may want a longer driveway than 50 feet. So all we're going to do now is create this situation I show in the lower, where people, after they get from the 50 feet, they're going to split off and have two separate driveways. So the length of driveway that we're talking about here still is not in question. I mean, it's going to be whatever it is based on where the house is. And to my mind, it's better to have a shared driveway between two houses, because then, too, you have two property owners who are interested in being able to take a fire truck. And also, you create a natural turnaround, a kind of a T, no matter how you do this, when you do that, when you share a driveway. And I think it's probably more likely you're going to get it paved in those things as well when people share a driveway and have less expense than if you did it by itself. The fire truck discussion is probably a separate discussion from this, because at the end of the day, people can site their houses wherever they want and they can have their driveways wherever they want. So even if you have two people that agree and want to do an easement of convenience between themselves, your director here is not going to allow that, because we tried that on another site where they wanted to share a drive, they wanted to minimize the amount of impact to the property, and we weren't allowed to have a greater easement along the property line than what was given. And I don't see how that level of control needs to be given to the county where they limit that length. It makes no sense to me. So I honestly don't believe any length is necessary. I also believe that the exceptions rule needs to be a little bit broader, especially for ag uses. And the reason being is it is relatively common to have ag uses where we have easements that allow people to go farm pieces that are on the other side of the river, for example. I don't know that there's a lot of those, but I'm certain that if you went through and started looking for them, you could find them, where a piece of parcel is isolated off another piece of ground, and at some point in time, there's going to be some transactions that create that. So I would like a better variance or alternative or exceptions requirement than what's in here right now. I don't have any problem with the width. I did not read this as clearly as was as explained, which I think that's still a problem, is the 20-foot minimum for just one driveway and 50 for multiple. I would like that to be a little bit more clear in how that's written. It kind of doesn't read that way to me. It looks like we have two minimums, one a 20-foot or a 50-foot, and until Amelia described it as one lot versus two lots or more, then I didn't see the beauty of that. So I think that clarification would be well received as well. I think the number of lots that you allow and whatnot is fine. I don't have a problem with that. But you are going to end up with situations where maybe people would like to share, two to four driveways. There's probably always going to be exceptions to every requirement, but at some point you got to draw the line, and two to four seems to be a reasonable number to me. With that, unless you have some questions, that's kind of my point, is really just the length in this case, and maybe just a little bit of a rewrite to clarify those things.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions for the public? Okay. So I'm wondering, if you limit the number of lots that have access from an access easement, what is the advantage to limiting the length?
So again, we understand that you have to have frontage, limited to four lots. So that's really disallowed. That's what's disallowed in creating lots and high lots without frontage, right? Mm-hmm. When we looked at that 50-foot limit and talked to Sarah about it, was just when the ordinance originally adopted, what it really got down to is using easements that were really long that didn't meet street specification standards.
But even then, they would only serve two single-family homes.
And again, I think, Scott, that was a point that we also realized that still have a really long driveway on your own that branch off after that 50 feet.
Except they'd have to be pairs.
Right.
They could potentially be pairs of really long driveways.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have to be and they still wouldn't meet the street specification.
No. But again, we just have had past issues where it's used as a workaround.
So if the limit is four houses and it's got to be off frontage, and the intent is to avoid bypassing the street requirement, if you're already limited to four houses and frontage access and minimum distance between, then why, I guess I don't understand the advantage to still limiting it to 50 feet. I can see setting a minimum. Right, I can see setting a minimum distance from the road before they branch so that you maybe avoid issues that way. But I'm just looking at this drawing where you have houses that are back set on long lots, where the advantage would be, it would seem to me that if they want a better engineered and better maintained more street-like driveway, that you would get a better result with combining them than splitting them. Because somebody might pave theirs, and mine might just be a wagon trail. In which case, it's rutted and dipped, and it's not going to be any good for anybody to get down.
All things being equal, is it always preferable? Is it the goal of the ordinance and the subdivision regulations to push people to have lots that have frontage? Would that be first priority?
That's part of the goal.
Yeah.
Okay. So I see Scott's point, but I also see that subdivision designers could be really lazy about designing lots if they know that they have this. You get poor subdivision design because you have this shortcut of a long easement. But to me, that's the only real advantage I see to limiting the length of the easement. And I'm not sure that that's a greater advantage than making sure we don't have too long parallel snaking driveways. I don't know, I'm torn on it.
That's definitely what we exactly
do. Is it possible to say that where something like where the driveway extends beyond the 50-foot easement, if it's combined, that you could still put some parameters around quality or width or something to do two things, right? One is it would give the option to maintain a shared drive, but it would also wouldn't have to be a street, but it could also guarantee the quality of the, right? So it wouldn't necessarily bypass.
A big part of that is making sure that it does not get extended. I mean, that's a big part of this 50-foot limit.
Yeah, but if there are lots, if you're limited to four lots, that off of that singular frontage access, then really what does it matter how long it is?
And again, that's why we came back to the street specifications with the main intent there. You know what you have.
But no driveway frontage or easement ends up being to county street specifications,
right.
Correct?
Right, and he's being used for more than one dwelling is the difference, not just a driveway, or they were being used as
body
roads. They're acting like roads.
They're acting like roads.
Yeah, but even if you treat it like a private road for access, you're still limited to four properties, right? So I'm still not sure that I see the advantage to that.
Is there a broad qualitative statement in the subdivision regulations about efficient lot design or anything like that that gives the County Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors an opportunity to say, hey, yeah, technically that meets all the lot layout requirements and everything, but that's baloney, and you and I both know it. I mean, because to me, that's the only really thing that we could achieve by limiting the easement length.
Under the general site planning standards for lots, there's a provision for a lot arrangement and design. The lot arrangement and design shall be such that all lots will provide satisfactory and desirable building sites properly related to topography. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, that's kind of
the money provision.
Right. Yeah. I just think that if you limit the easement length, I get what we're trying to do here. We want good subdivision design, and even when it's not done with the plat, we'd like it to be at least thought out a little bit. But I'm afraid you could have side effects, unintended consequences of this that generate even worse lots. trying to achieve that 50-foot minimum.
Or worse access.
Or maximum.
Or emergency vehicles, right?
Yeah. It's about a wash, in my view, so I guess I'd have trouble.
Yeah, so again, we stand here on the side of, re-clarifying the existing provisions with that 50-foot limit. But we did weigh the fact that
There's been a mention of 50 feet in here, though it's been a subject of debate as to what the 50 feet means. But how long has that been in there?
That was adopted with this whole ordinance in 2013.
Yeah.
And
that's part of what we worked on, trying to clarify.
So you're not really introducing anything new. You're trying to clarify how it's interpreted.
Right. Yeah.
That's part of it.
Again,
looked
at,
Can I speak to that? Yeah,
look, just a second. Again, we looked at, what it means, but what the point is, and that's, how we end up keeping it. The emphasis on the street specification standards and talking here, and some of the other folks that were involved in implementing this at first, but we didn't think about what you guys are considering weighing the workaround with the guys and everything that
Any other questions of staff before we let Scott come in?
To maintain the street specifications without having the 50-foot limit, and that would mean that the whole access drive, like in Scott's example, would have to meet street specifications all the way. Even if there were, and I don't think there's room for two more lots back here, but even if there were, it'd have to go meet street specifications all the way.
Until it splits.
Right, and so again...
Until the final split. Not the first split, the final split. Correct?
We looked at having separate drives. Do we really want to get into designing individual drives? No. But do we really want to require, full street specification standards as well? That's something we consider that seemed a little bit...
Well, you could specify a minimum. You could specify a minimum grade B requirements for width and maintenance and whatever. Or something else, right? But
well, I would be concerned that the street specifications would have to be maintained until the final split, because otherwise you've got on this you could have two driveways off, and then if the street can be continues, you can have Marvin's rutted driveway. Again, one to the next two houses.
As an example.
I'm not concerned about firefighters. I'm concerned about getting apparatus, huge engines down something that can be designed poorly. And thinking particularly about volunteers fighting structural fires. And we don't want to make that any more complicated than it is. That's my point.
If you had, if a lot has frontage, we don't have any requirements that any kind of driveway be built at all.
If a lot has frontage, you don't have a problem. Because you're on a public street there.
Right, if you have a really deep lot, we don't even require that a driveway be built back to the
house. You can have a 500-foot house.
Grass. There are all kinds of situations with rural areas for a single-family home where it's an eighth of a mile or a quarter of a mile long.
Right. Okay, Scott, we were talking about the 50-foot existing for some time. You had a comment on that?
Well, the 50-foot was listed as a width, and there was never any length specified. And so how it got the length of that was always of some undetermined value. And so we agreed with Mr. Dissel on this one that it'd be 50 feet long, which worked fine because the two accesses that are on 505th, those were required by the county for us to combine the lots. We didn't have a choice. We were required to share the accesses. The other ones I'm just showing are hypotheticals. But the two that are on 505th, those were required. And so we ended up with this 20-foot wide by 50-foot long. based on the reading of the previous code. So I think the width on those is fine, actually, at 20 feet, because, again, it's just going to be one driveway. And when we think of these things, we think of it more of a of pavement width at the maximum. So that's why we were okay with the 20 by 50. So we made an agreement. But these easements have a width and they have a length. And so the way they've got it described now is one lot, 20 foot, 50 foot long. Two to four lots, 50 feet wide, 50 foot long, which doesn't seem to make sense to me. In fact, I'm not even sure the width needs to be 50, but I don't have a real great problem with that because generally that 50 foot's going to kind of keep being the setback or in an area you can't build anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. You have to remember the other thing that we do, too, with these things is we're usually running utilities into these places as well. We want to run them parallel to the road in a logical place, and so usually we're having some utility easement that goes with this as well. So there's a lot of things that go on. Though as much as I'd love to get into the fire discussion, that's kind of a separate thing. You have lots. I've seen lots where people cut out or just build a 40, and they've got a quarter mile road clear back to the back, and it's a gravel road, and it's a legal lot because they're on a single 40, and they're a quarter mile long. And some of those roads look pretty sketchy to me, but that's a kind of a separate problem, I think, and from this requirement. These are what we're talking about here is planned subdivisions and kind of planned development of how we want to do things. You got to remember that all these standards have been upgraded quite a bit, i.e. requiring paving. We didn't require paving until relatively recently as well. And there's other standards that could be applied for gravel. I mean, look, for the ones that are on 505th, that is a gravel road. I mean, and it's barely 20 feet wide as it is. So for you to require the driveways to have a lot bigger, better road than what the gravel road is that you're connecting to is kind of a little bit out there for me. So thanks for letting me talk to you.
Do you have questions or comments?
Well, I'm torn because I definitely don't want to leave that statement that we're striking about the 50 foot in width and parallel to the front lot line. I don't see what it's trying to achieve, and it certainly isn't clear. But I'm not sure that limiting easements to 50 foot in depth, that's a big.
The goal is so that they don't get extended, and if we can
right, but they can't
identify all those situations where they can be actually extended. That gets to the heart of this issue.
But virtually in every situation, that would trigger a plat in most cases. And we have a limit on the number of units it can serve, right?
We can get access to up to four existing lots that could be potentially built.
Okay, so if you had scenarios, there could be situations where they could potentially extend it to parcels that would be built. I guess my thinking is, and maybe I'm not really understanding the issue, it's possible. But it seems to me that if you have, let's say you had four lots that were sharing one access, it would seem to me that you would have better access by having those four combine onto one potential driveway that extended beyond 50 feet than saying it comes in 50 feet and then breaks off into four individual driveways. So I also am not sure I understand the issue about increasing access or creating additional problems if that shared easement is already limited to serving four lots. If it's already limited to serving four lots, then the question is, what is the advantage to making them have four driveways after 50 feet versus, let's say you have four square lots, and you bring one driveway, one shared access in down the middle. You're going to come in 50 feet and have to now break into four driveways, which means two driveways are going to go to the two front lots. Now you're going to have two split driveways that have easements on those lots to get to the back two lots. It would seem like it would make much more sense to have one shared easement that ran right down the middle and then branched off than to split it after 50 feet into four unique, independently maintained driveways, independently constructed. And I guess I'm not understanding still the issue of the concern about adding to it if it's already limited to four lots. What's the piece of that that I'm missing? I'm not understanding.
That's the
easement.
Yeah.
But what's the risk that's posed by having one shared access that runs 200 feet mm-hmm. versus shared access that runs 50 feet?
I think it's the same point that you brought up before. One's individual's driveways, one's shared between multiple people. And that might, gain some efficiencies, but should that really be meeting street specification standards?
Well, the driveways are not going to meet street specifications.
Exactly.
Standards.
Those are just individuals.
So the goal would be that the driveways are as short as possible. If the ordinance somehow encourages the driveways to be as short as possible, it encourages shared easement to be longer, you are more likely to have better street for most of the.
That only works under certain scenarios of lot configurations. And if that's the point, what you're trying to do is say only build X number of feet from a frontage road.
Yeah, I think that's
not all lots and configurations work like that.
The 50-foot limit is an attempt to balance not having design requirements on people's individual driveways and not allowing easements, but not burdening folks with requiring them to be street specification standards. I think it's an attempt to strike that balance.
Yeah, but I guess I'm not understanding why that needs to be balanced, because what you're seeing is we don't want to burden you with design to have to meet street specifications. So you're all going to have to do your own.
The goal, I think, is to encourage people, property developers, to start those with lots that have much to
build. Yeah, but you're only talking about a four lot limit already.
It also. Okay, so like 3B, for example, we're only talking about this access easement being usable where you do have frontage, but site distance is an issue.
Off the public road, right?
Off
the county. But you can use it, you can do a shared access easement off the private road. It's just that we don't bring driveways off the private road, so we don't have those site or separation distance requirements.
Off the private roads.
We don't review permits for some of those.
Okay.
Only for county roads does the county review those applications for accesses.
Now I'm really confused. What would be the purpose of that you could not have a private road to a residence if you're not allowed to have a private
road? No, we just don't review the permits. We don't review the applications. We don't have separation distance requirements for private roads.
Gotcha.
Driving on private roads.
But what I'm saying is an access easement is only an option where there is frontage, but there's a site distance problem. Mm-hmm. Where there is frontage on a public road.
Right, or
where they desire to do it.
Or where they desire to do it on a private road.
So what is the requirement then for a private road that would keep them from just saying, this is not an access easement, we're building a private road to service these four houses?
They have standards.
A vegetation review private roads.
No, we do review private roads.
Do.
Sorry. Yeah, we don't review driveways constructed on private roads.
Yeah.
Got it.
So the real goal of this then is to say you either live with a 50-foot easement or you build a private road. It's a yes or no. Is that the goal or... Is there something else hidden in here that I'm missing? That
really, I'm sorry.
Is the goal to say you either live with the 50-foot easement and then branch into individual driveways, or you construct it beyond 50 feet as a private road? Is that what the goal of the 50-foot limit is? Is to say build a private road, or it's can only go 50 feet?
I think generally we encourage property owners and developers to construct roads. And if they don't, then they provide these allowances to achieve access.
Okay.
And
that's the part that I was missing.
The point that Linda made about the efficiency of the access and maneuver. That it does get into design, but we don't really do that, but I guess we kind of do through that length extension.
In a new subdivision plat, do we typically allow private roads?
Up to four.
To serve up to four lots. Mm-hmm.
Private streets are permitted provided they serve four or fewer lots, only in subdivisions of not more than four lots. Private streets shall be designed in accordance with the requirements listed on Table 88.1, which is our street design guidelines.
So to just cut to the chase, why don't you just say it has to be a private road?
If it extends beyond 50 feet. Because
I think the roads, if you had one and then off, would be maintained much better than four individuals.
Right, but it would, if you did that, then it would now have to be constructed as a private road, which then would meet the ditch drainage requirements, etc.
I'm thinking in the country sometimes that's why.
I think that's overkill.
But I'm in the country.
Me too.
Well, this is only county. This is only in the county that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's overkill.
So is it the common? So I agree. I think we're in agreement that something that's more straightforward for a rescue personnel, whoever it is, that looks more like a road than who knows where this or that goes, is a good thing, and will probably be maintained better. But you're wanting to see a lower, have it be something like that, but not necessarily to the private road specifications. So could we get that by getting rid of the 50 feet? I mean, you may not get what you're wanting there. I don't see the advantage of the 50 feet, that it can only be 50 feet long. The
advantage of limiting it to 50 feet is that if it goes beyond 50 feet, then you're required to construct it as a private road and meet road requirements.
But I think you can end up with some things that are more complex, maybe more dysfunctional, 50 feet requirement.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, Commission, you are staff, you're asking for a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors on this today. And so basically our our options are to recommend approval or recommend denial. Presumably, we could recommend approval with a modification, or we could remand it back to staff to work on it some more.
I have one quick question, if I could.
Yep, just one second. If we were to do that, do you have the option of taking it on to the Board of Supervisors if we vote to remand it back to you?
If there's more work for us to do, we would likely come back to the Planning Zone Commission before we went.
Okay, but if we voted to do that, we'd probably want to give them some very clear direction on what would make it, what we wanted to see changed.
I can tell you that if this provision that's before you is supported by the recommended for approval by the Planning Zone Commission, it will be scheduled for the Board of Supervisors to look at it for its first consideration on the 9th.
Okay. Go ahead, Marvin.
So my thought is, what if there's a compromise of where the access only serves, if it's a single house, then it's not an issue, right? Because then it's just a driveway. If it serves more than one house but less than four or less, then that's where we get into a quandary. And I'm wondering if you could make it a compromise, because I can see the advantage to having it as a private road if it's serving four houses and things. I get it. But I'm wondering if you could say if it's serving up to two houses, right, as a compromise, if it's serving up to two houses where it's just one driveway that splits, that it could be a longer distance. If it serves more than two houses, up to four houses, then it would be a private road. Because then you would have more resources to be able to divide that cost. You generally be talking about more land to work with when you're doing your lot design to include the private road. But if it's just taking one lot, splitting it, and trying to have shared access, I don't see that as needing the private road, but also would still benefit from having better access by having a shared drive beyond 50 feet.
So you're suggesting different standards for two houses as opposed to four?
I'm saying...
To just make it simple.
Yes.
As you said.
Okay. Yes. You could extend it beyond 50 feet if it's only serving two lots. If it's serving more than two lots, up to four lots, which is the limit, then there's the 50 foot limit. If you go beyond that, you have to do a private road. Because a four lot would seem more like a mini development than just splitting and putting two houses. That's my...
Would you like to put that in the form of a motion to remand it back to the staff to consider those? Working out the wording on something like that?
And you're already talking just about new lots that would be created through a process. Because right now, just two lots, it's just two, that's a residential parcel subdivision, and they have that ability to do anything.
Or minor.
Which is what most people want.
Okay, so then in Scott's situation here, then they're still limited to 50, and you would want them to do a private road to serve two houses because it's not a one.
It's a major subdivision.
If we delete it, the final sentence in 2B and the final sentence in 3B, what heck would break loose then?
Then they can be as long as they want it, so long as there are no more than four dwellings and everybody had a frontage.
Well, the frontage four of them shared frontage.
Frontage onto?
Onto the access easement.
Frontage onto a road. Like in this example, Holker Drive. You take access via the easement, but both have frontage on this road.
How much frontage?
I'm going to make a motion because I don't think we're not going to solve this tonight. So I move that we remail this back to staff to look at a compromise for how we, based on the input that we've given tonight about possible compromise with a 2-lot versus 4 lots, and come back to us.
Can I just get a clarification? Is that for new lots or existing lots?
You're talking in a situation like this where it's a major subdivision plat that's already been platted?
Well, I see an issue with this anyways, that it might not meet the 300-foot separation. Even if you do have a,
right,
a shared access
situation, it's an option, and they can do it if they want to. Have a shared access.
So clarification would be, wherever this would apply, either new or existing. My concern is saying that if you can only have a 50-foot shared easement and then it goes into whatever, versus if it's only serving two properties, being able to extend it beyond 50 feet, because that would make sense.
So if your motion is to remand it back, we're all only giving the staff some direction to work on and bring something back to us. So we're not dictating policy here. So it doesn't have to be, you know what I mean?
Right.
All engrossing.
Any help is appreciated.
Yeah.
So, hypothetically, if a hypothetical revision came back and said that if it's only serving two properties, it's not limited to a 250-foot limit. If it was serving 3 or 4 properties, then it would require a shared access, that it would require meeting private requirements.
Okay, we have a motion to remand it back to staff with specific direction to consider different lengths of easements for different conditions. In either situation, new or existing, as appropriate. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Smith and a second by Cable. Discussion on the motion, I would just say, staff, you could come back and say, sorry, that's not feasible. Or we'd recommend it in new but not in existing. That we're at, my interpretation is we're asking you to consider this and look at it and determine its feasibility. Would you agree with that, Marvin?
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion? Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Burkett.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Vince.
Yes.
So our goal would be to bring this issue back to the Planning and Commission.
That wasn't a question. That was.
This is a statement.
No question mark.
Oh, that.
Okay. Okay. All right. Then we're on swiftly to ordinance number 277, adding kennels back into the conditional uses.
Bob Kennels, as we mentioned at the last meeting, the language for the raising, breeding, boarding of dogs and other small animals was inadvertently removed from the county's code of ordinances in Table 90.1. And so the goal is to reinsert the previous existing language back into it. Again, it stated kennels for the raising, breeding, and boarding dogs or other small animals prior to all buildings, including exercise runways, be at least 50 feet from all property lines and at least 200 feet from any residential district property line. So it provided some general design or setback requirements, 50 feet generally, 200 feet from an adjacent property if it contained a dwelling, or 200 feet if the zoning district were a residential district. Also, there's a requirement that if it had a high land evaluation site assessment, then it wouldn't be a candidate for this particular use. So that would be put back there as well. And then potentially be permitted with a conditional use permit in the A1 or the A2 agricultural district. We mentioned too that we visited with Sue McCaskey, the director of animal control, and visited with her about the reinstating the previous language. And then she shared with us the amendment that they went through with chapter 45, which is the animal control and welfare chapter, because those provisions in chapter 45.11 would also apply in this particular situation. So chapter 45.11 covers standards for private kennels. There's language in there about a requirement that the applicants obtain a license from the Animal Control Department before they get their licensing from either the state or the federal department. There's requirements in there about air temperature control for the health and comfort of the animal. There's provisions in there about providing adequate space for exercise, language about thinking about and managing animal waste so that it doesn't accumulate and become a hazard or become offensive with regard to smell. There's language in there about trying to limit the amount of noise from kennels. And then also there are provisions which would generally apply as well, which are under 45.12, which cover animal welfare and care, which also covers not only domestic animals but livestock as well. So, from our visit with her, she thought that, with the existing language that we're proposing to be restated and the work that they did on the amendment in chapter 45, again, the animal control and welfare chapter, that the safety, the health, and the care of dogs and smaller animals would be addressed through that ordinance. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. And then I need to throw out that we do have a couple of applications. One is a dog breeding request, and one is a dog daycare request. And they are on hold pending the reinstatement of this ordinance. Again, we're asking for a recommendation to restate this previous language back into the ordinance. Recommendation of approval. This would go to the Board of Supervisors at the October 9th meeting. State law requires three considerations unless they're the second or the third wave of course. We have to answer questions.
Questions for staff?
So, animal welfare, they were all right with this wording being added back in,
yes,
because it's aligned with their chapter 45
animal control.
Yeah, okay.
Any other questions? Is there any input from the public on this one? Okay. We are ready for a motion, unless there's more discussion.
I move that we recommend the reinstatement into the this to the Board of Supervisors.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Merkin, second by Smith. Is there any discussion on the motion? Roll call, please.
Smith.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Benz.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
Great. Let's see. And now we are on to these would be discussion items, correct? We're not actually making the recommendation of the Board of Supervisors on the next couple.
Home business.
All right. Home businesses. Bring it on.
All right. Home business. We had discussion at the last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. We did put together a memo for you to kind of outline some of the major points, not all the points that were discussed. I'll go through them, and then I'll just go through the major amendments that we're proposing. So from that meeting, there was some discussion that home business owners should be in compliance before they request to extend the conditional use permit, whether it be a minimal easing of the requirements or a substantial easing of the requirements. There was some language about the fact that there should be some general guidelines to help the home business owners to understand, you know, what exactly are the limits, and then to provide some direction to the Planning and Development Director, because again, with a minimal easing of the requirements, those would be reviewed and decided by the Planning and Development Director. There was some language or discussion about incorporating some language about the fact that these easings of the standards should not impact surrounding properties, so no nuisances could be created. Home business owners may go through an appeal process if they don't agree with the Planning and Development Director's decision, which is the case currently. And then there was some discussion, lengthy discussion, about the length of time, primarily those that would be considered substantial easing of the requirements. They submit the conditional use permit. They have a transition plan in place, and we put in language to allow up to 3 years to allow this extension, and then a one-time request to extend it up to 2 more years. So in looking at it, there could potentially be a total of 7 total years. 2 years to be compliant, whether it be a new or an existing, at least 2 years. If the extension is approved, again, it would be the full process. It would be submitted to staff. It would be reviewed by all the county departments. It would come to the Planning and Zoning Commission for review and consideration. Planning and Zoning Commission would make a recommendation to the Board of Adjustment, who would ultimately make that final decision. So, any comments on comments that were made at the meeting before we actually go into the proposal? Basically, as far as the changes, we're really just looking at the two ways for home businesses to plan their growth. And one is considered a minimal easing, which are reviewed by and potentially approved by the Planning and Development Director. And the other scenario would be something that would be more substantial. And it could be maybe the construction of another building. It could be more outside storage or more employees. But if you look at everything in red is proposed. So minimal easing of the requirements. You've got home businesses need to demonstrate that they're in compliance for 2 years before they request this minimal easing or deviation from the standards. B states that applicants shall submit an application in writing to the Planning and Development Director. They would include the reasons for the request, the standards by which they're requesting the easing from, a site development plan that covers existing conditions, and then proposed improvements. C talks about that the Planning and Development Director may approve the request
if it's anticipated that there would be no negative impacts to the site and surrounding area, the easing of these, the minimal easing would continue with the life of that home business permit for that applicant. The planning development director has the discretion, if upon receiving a submittal for what the applicant, the home business owner, believes to be a minimal easing, if it's determined to be something beyond that, then the planning development director has that discretion of requesting a substantial application, which would be a conditional use permit, which would go through the full review process. And then we get into, you know, what it is that we're talking about. What is a minimal easing? And we put some language in here about being consistent and comparable to things such as allowing up to two employees, creating outdoor storage area less than 500 square feet that would be screened from the adjacent properties, from the road right-of-way, and if existing screening can be used, that would be accepted. And then to allow maybe a storage building not greater than 120 square feet, which would be, you know, like a garden shed. He talks about the minimum easing of the standard should not be objectionable to its surroundings. This is where it gets into the nuisance factors, talks about odor, gas, dust, smoke, or noise. And then F talks about the appeal process, which is in a different chapter in 82.02. Any questions about minimal easing before we go into the substantial?
I do have one. The 2-year minimum requirement for compliance. What if you started a business and, like, raising goats or something, and all of a sudden it wanted to expand beyond what you could do, and that was less than 2 years? So could you say minimum of 2 years compliance or since inception?
You're talking about if it's less than a 2-year period?
Yeah.
Because I think you're getting to what the reality is. What we're seeing situations where some of the home businesses are not compliant, and I think there's going to be some strong interest in the proposed revisions.
I wanted to just say, I understand the reason for the, I mean, we talked about that before, about having a minimum thing of compliance. But if they can show, hey, my application was the first, is when I started, right? So if they can show that their original application was not just them letting you know that they've been doing it for 5 years, but if it was actually when they started the business, you know, if they can satisfy you that we only started this business 6 months ago as a home business, that's when we applied for it, and we've been in compliance for 6 months, for a year or a year and a half, and we want to expand, right? Are we going to say, I don't want to have to say, sorry, you have to wait a year without growing your business, or, you know.
Are you getting to, like, catches in the field, or what we would call a catch in the field, where maybe they're operating and it's really something that would fall under the home business?
No, I'm saying in the case where it's not that, right? This is where I'm starting a new goat business. I started it in January, and all of a sudden I need to expand, and it was, you know, my business plan is going much better than I anticipated. And so I need to get a minimal or a significant easing, and it hasn't been 2 years yet.
And you have a permit.
I
would welcome input from the Planning and Zoning Commission. We did have a scenario, I think, when we first started with this.
I would just say, or since inception, right? Minimum of 2 years or since inception, that they've been in compliance. And then it's up to them, the burden's on them, to show to your satisfaction actually when they started, right? But if they can show that they've been in compliance since they started doing it,
then you should, then I don't think we have to penalize them. Make them wait.
I see what you're saying, but I feel the opposite, because a home business is an exceptional situation where you're supposed to be held under tight constraints, because you can go to lots of commercial areas anytime to be bigger. And I don't want, what I would like is to see, is for this to be transitional, the changes we're considering to be transitional, not I'm planning on this. I'm planning on getting my permit and coming in a few months, doing the minimal easing, then coming in later on, excuse me, doing the more substantial easing, then get the extension to the substantial easing. See if I can. What I'd rather have is for people to be able to launch a business at home, demonstrate that they intended to and did in fact stay within the parameters for 2 years, and then say, okay, now I can grow this if need be. You know what I mean?
I think we're already expanding quite a bit on what home business ordinance has said.
With these amendments?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
I think, I'm not particularly for expanding them more, because I just think we're reacting to a situation. I think it's good to look at it, but I think it can be taken advantage of. And I think that's what Aaron maybe is smashing for us. That's what I'm saying, is I can see how somebody could take advantage of it to do something that the ordinance really wasn't intended to do, and do that for quite a while.
I don't know what the exact right time length of time is. 2 years seems reasonable to me. Maybe it's 1 year, but I don't think you want to leave that open to interpretation as to what's an adequate amount of.
I think the 2 years is based on the doing the biennial review.
Okay, we have the annuals now, and we're going to go to about 2 years.
That kind of makes sense.
That's what
I'm thinking. Yeah, there's a correction. In section 5, you say biannual, which is not a word. It's either biannual or biennial.
Yeah.
Biannual is once it is.
Google it.
I corrected on that.
So what's the intention?
Biannual
is every 6 months.
Semiannual are both every 6 months.
Right.
Biennial is
every 6 months. Biennial. This is biennual. Look at section 5.
I instead of you.
It's a combination of the two words.
Well then, yes. There is a correction.
So it should be biennial.
We made you work.
Right.
Yes.
That's why I was confused. Is it every 6 months or is it every other year?
I took it every 6 months.
And I didn't say 2 years out, didn't
I? Right. So
okay.
Should be biennial.
I was confused. Okay. That straightened me out.
Right.
I was confused when you said 2 years. And I'm thinking, why should we go 2 years when we're doing biennial? Every 6 months.
Right.
Okay.
It's a good point, because if you had it set up for 6 months inspections, then you could say, okay,
why
we do have a rough history.
Year? That's what I was thinking. If you've got two done, why not do a year?
Right.
I mean, I guess I don't know why we have to change that you want to do it versus home businesses. I like to see home business grow. That's how everybody gets started.
Right.
And my only reason for bringing that up is, what if your plan was looking at this, right? Oh, I'll run for 2 years as is, and then in 2 years, if I need to, I will try and transition. What if after 1 year, you're thinking, I'm ready to transition, but I'm not ready to go into a commercial space. I need that transition period still, but it's happening faster than 2 years. Right? They still shouldn't exceed the terms of what's allowed under a minimal or a significant easing,
I think the question then becomes, how much time do you need to demonstrate that you are capable of staying inside the parameters of the home business before you seek an easement?
Well, the easement is the transition period, really, to help you move it out of the home business, right?
If somebody thought they were going to have something that really wasn't a home business, they should have started it as something that wasn't a home business. That's my feeling.
Well, except that if you don't know if you'll be able to be successful and lease commercial space, you start it as a home business, and if it's successful, then you grow it and move on.
Do you think that the reason to do this transitioning and all of that is to allow pilot programs, so to speak? Because I don't think that's what it is. And that's what I'm kind of hearing you say, is we'll let people have a home business to see if they can make it work, and then we'll give them more time and more time. I don't quite understand that. A home business to me is a very defined thing. It is in your home, a small business that isn't going to interfere with anybody else.
Right.
You know, it's a very, it's like the beauty parlor, you know, it's that somebody's got in you know, behind the kitchen or something. It's you know, maybe one person, you know, it's not the kind of.
And maybe not all home businesses would lend themselves to this kind of easing anyway.
We have
the point to these easings is explicitly so that if you have a home business that is compliant with home business requirements, mm-hmm. and you need to grow it, but you're not ready to get commercial space, then it lets you, based on some parameters, grow it a little as a home business.
You have to sign a 12-year or 12-month lease, and you might not.
Right. You want to make sure you're ready to take
right.
that.
As I see that.
This is like an interim step.
As a business
step.
Owner, I understand that.
It's like an interim step between a home business and getting off of the home business into a commercial enterprise.
So our reality,
is that right?
Our reality that we're dealing with is there's a number of them that have more than one employee, so there's multiple employees. There's outside storage, and sometimes you've got more than one accessory structure constructed or being used. So with this ordinance, we're actually asking them to come into compliance. So really, to achieve that may be
home business plus
difficult, you know. If it's outside storage, maybe that'd be put inside of a building. But when you've got 6 and 10 employees, I think the idea is, you know, maybe one person could come to this home business site and bring the equipment. But as these businesses grow, they've got multiple things that need to be pulled out and used for various jobs. So.
So, Jerry, is it your intent then, or would you say the intent is because some things have happened and people are in situations that we want to give the people who right now have exceeded what they should have done, going to be work with them and help them get transitioned? But that's not the same as looking at new businesses that might start and not holding them to the regulations.
Right now we're working with them to come into compliance when they're out of compliance. We don't go right to code enforcement, but we can. We have the authority to do that, but that's not the approach that we take.
But I'm asking about the proposed ordinance, not about how you operate.
With a significant modification, it can serve as an opportunity for home businesses to try things for that time period, and if it doesn't work, then they can move back into compliance with the existing provisions or go to maybe an easing of the situation or launch to a commercial light industrial district or to a city where it's zoned for that use. So I think there's
a third valid motive too, which is the reality is we have a lot of people start home businesses as a way to circumvent having to get a commercial space. So they start small to get the permits, stand to the regulations, and then they grow without bounds or any recognition that there's that they're regulated at all. And this is trying to pull that all above board and say, we have a process for this. We understand that having an abrupt transition of a small home business into something bigger, that, like, well, like the guy who was in here not that long ago, you know, that would be a hard overnight thing. But we have a process for that to make that transition easier. I think bringing everything above board and where it's all on the table is another motivation for it, in my opinion. But
we may be doing something that we do a lot, and I think it happens a lot in zoning, planning, development things, is trying to write an ordinance that works for every single possible situation that there can be. And as a friend of mine says, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. I think we maybe have something pretty good here, and maybe in our striving to get perfect, we're just going to frustrate ourselves. I'm going to make a motion.
Okay.
I would move that we...
Can I interrupt you just for a second? We're actually not taking action on it. It's just a discussion item tonight.
Yeah, it's just as you go through the second part of it. But yeah. Questions on the FAA.
So we've been doing what we're supposed to do. We're discussing it. So
can we do it anyway? Can we make...
No, because we didn't have a public hearing on it.
Oh. That's right.
With the right publications and everything. So
my thought is change biennial to biennial, and I think it's good enough, and we should get moving on it.
With both the minimal and the significant easing?
Yeah.
So I agree. I think you've done some really good stuff here, and I think what will prove to be some really innovative stuff that is good for business and good for right or wrong motive, I don't know. I think incubating businesses isn't a horrible idea.
Can I just say there was an article in the APA magazine recently, the American Planning Association magazine, going through what's typical of a home business ordinance, and this is not typical.
Yes.
It's going to be looked at, I think, by a lot of managers.
I think it's particularly innovative to bump it to a conditional use permit at some point. Like to say, okay, you're no longer a regular home business permit. This needs additional review. Because it starts to, some of these things, especially in the rural areas, really start to look like other conditional uses. So I really like that. If anything, I could lose the minimal easing entirely, because I think that there's a, we've already smoothed it a lot by creating an option for the home, the CUP home business. But I'm not going to suggest. I think it's good work too. So it's just my thought.
Is there any way that staff could ask for like maybe some direction or even like a motion on the point that Marvin made about the 2 years compliance situation? Because I guess we need.
Why don't we just go around the table and get opinions? Kathy, what do you think about require them to be standard home business permit in compliance for 2 years before they go and seek changes?
What do you think? I think
what's your opinion?
It should be one.
You think it should be one? What do you think, Jerry?
One.
I'm okay with two.
I'm okay with two.
I think it would be two if they are a non-compliant home business, and one if they're a new, they can show they're a new business.
So if you're bringing one,
if you are 100% starting from scratch as a new business, and you came in and did everything right and started, and at the end of a year, you were already expanding beyond the limits of a home business and ready to do an easement, right, to expand a little bit. I don't think you should have to wait 2 years to have that done. But if you're a non-compliant business, if you're an existing business that has been non-compliant,
flaunting the rules.
Then I think, yes, you should have to wait.
Have to sit in the corner a little bit.
Have to sit in the corner a little bit.
There are some people that don't even know they have to have a home.
And that's true. So maybe so one year is the right thing for both cases. But I think there should be a minimum time period. But I also think that if you're in a new business and you can say, hey, I'm a brand new business, I just applied and I'm really doing well.
That gives us some guidance.
It shouldn't be 2 years.
Okay, that helps. It's not a deal breaker for me. I could go 1 year, too. But
we'll look at that.
I'm dying to get it in use. It's not going to be perfect, like you were saying.
Okay.
It's not going to go well in every situation, but I'd love to see it applied and see how it goes. Any other comments on this for the staff?
Can you give people an option? Right? People that need it.
Yep.
People that are not compliant that would like to be compliant, but...
Thank you very much for the input.
Okay. Next one is discussion of proposed amendments to Chapter 85 and 90 Commercial Campground. Emily.
Okay. So last month we had quite a bit of discussion on commercial campgrounds. Some of the points that we gleaned from the meeting. One is that a commercial campground does imply a turnover of users or people staying at the campground. It is the intent of the ordinance to prevent commercial campground sites from becoming permanent dwellings. Our ordinance does, however, not need to regulate both the months of operation and the length of stay of guests. So from what we talked about, we think that most commissioners were recommending eliminating the regulations addressing months of operation, but maintain the regulation on length of stay in order to prevent the use of cabins, travel trailers, campers, etc., from being used as dwellings. The commercial campground owners or management should have discretion on placing length of stay limitations. That was another point that was brought up. So what we're proposing is to strike the limit of permitting, or strike from the definition, such use shall be permitted during the month of May, June, July, August, and September. Oh, I'm sorry. Under definition of travel trailer park and commercial campground, about halfway through, we're proposing to strike such use shall be permitted during the month of May, June, July, August, and September. During the month of October through April, the use shall not exceed 30 days duration and shall solely be used for living and or sleeping purposes. However, cabins may be occupied year round. That everything would be scratched. Then 90.08, the supplemental standards. We are recommending revising, well, essentially getting rid of letter H and replacing it with guests staying at a commercial campground or travel trailer park, or guests may stay at a commercial campground or travel trailer park for no more than 30 consecutive days, unless the site is located within a residential manufactured home district, or extended stay beyond 30 consecutive days is requested as part of a conditional use permit submittal and is granted as a condition of approval. Then we're suggesting also adding I, which is commercial cabins are not permitted within the residential manufactured housing district.
So that means in a trailer home, trailer park, you can have cabins that you rent out on an as needed basis.
We're kind of separating the
gotcha.
Commercial campground use, moving people through. And then also the intended use of the residential manufactured home park to provide mobile housing options.
Temporary, right?
Yes.
So separating short term from long term.
Correct.
Gotcha.
So under H, you're saying no more than 30 consecutive days unless you ask us to do something else and we say, yes.
Correct. Okay. Three of C, which would come before the planning and zoning commission to vote for adjustment.
So how does this, go ahead, Kathy.
Is this county parks, like at Dakin's Lake?
No.
Private businesses, like private. KOA.
Okay, and Twin Acres. That's right.
Correct, although, yeah,
their grandfather did. Yeah, it'd be private businesses.
I see nothing wrong with what they're doing, so that's, I live by them, so yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Any direction for staff to make any further amendments, or?
Nope, I like it.
Okay.
Jerry, I have a question. Yep. Under H, so are you striking all cabins from being built and rented?
No cabins can be constructed in a residential manufactured home district.
No, I think I understand what you're saying. Under H, we are striking that language, although in the definition we still have the construction of cabins is permitted in accordance with Chapter
90.081. So it's still in there, you can?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Comments? Have what you need? Okay, so we'll see that again soon.
Appreciate your input, yeah, November.
Okay. Excellent. All right, do we have any staff comments?
We do. October is National Planning Month. Mm-hmm. Planning Development Department is planning to have an open house. Leanne and Matt and her office helped us with some ideas on how to communicate with the outside world. The goal is to reach private property owners and really anyone proposing projects, but we want to be able to focus on ordinances that we passed recently, agritourism, special events ordinance, but also communicate some of the things that we're working on currently, and then use this as an opportunity to encourage property owners, developers, to come in and talk to us about their projects. So this is something that we're planning on having likely Friday, October 26th. We're still working out the details of it. It'll be like from 2 to 4, 2 to 5, and either in this space, here, meeting room, or in our offices.
We'll get a notice about that?
So, yeah, you definitely will get a notice. And we're doing a proclamation before the Board of Supervisors. We're using social media. Please chime in what else we're working on.
We're doing social media posts, like weekly themes about recent ordinances. So this week is about access. So hopefully we'll get some feedback. And the next week is the new agritourism ordinance. The week after that is the home business
and then transportation. We are also planning to do some like targeted mailings to the Home Builders Association, to realtors, some of our major developers. And then also
press
release.
Nice.
Very cool. Opportunity to communicate about things that we work on and what we're working on now and just talk to them about their projects. So then also in November we'll have, as we mentioned, the two ordinances, the home business cabin ordinance, and then also the access ordinance. We've got several conditional use permits. Pleasant Grove Church is looking at adding an accessory structure for use for their members and affiliates. They're also planning to do a parking spot on where they own property, and they're working on a lease across the street on the south side of the parking purchase. Excuse me. NextEra Energy is proposing to change out existing equipment to larger blades and differences or changes in their hub houses. So they're looking at changing out 100 of those units, and they're going to submit in November. So that'll be before the planning Planning and Zoning Commission. Dog breeding, boarding, we've got those conditional use permits. We've got a vacation acquisition request, request of Haynes on 199th Street. And then when Ryan was here, the planning intern, he did a lot of research this summer on an item that was on our work program to kind of investigate the subdivisions that are out there to figure out, based on the resolutions that were approved, and what the status of those roads or drives are, were they publicly dedicated or not to the general public for public use, and then to try to capture what kind of signage we have on those roads. And I think that's about it. So this, it's going to be a busy...
All in November and December?
Yeah, November. And maybe some more cases.
You don't want to push any of that to January at all? Okay. Okay, commission comments.
I have just one. As at our last meeting, I said that I was going to re-up for staying on the commission. Is there anything that's needed from me to do that?
Did you submit an application?
No, you guys said that you had my application still on file and didn't need it.
Okay. Yeah, so it requires the board to take action on it. So
okay.
I'll check on the status of that.
All right. I was asked by... She was coming up in the elevator.
Thanks for reminding me.
Any other comments from the commission? October is also Goat-tober. So as a planner and a goat farmer, we've got double duty overlap. All right, we have a motion to adjourn.
Goat-tober.
What's that?
What's planned for Goat-tober?
Eating goat meat.
Right, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Well, come to the open house.
Yes.
I just want to stir.
Okay. All right, we have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Merkin, and second by Smith. We are adjourned.